probably one of the best-known stories in the entirety of the Old Testament is the story of Daniel and the lion's den, so we're not going to talk about that today. You already know that story. You already know that. I want to talk, before we start, about church camp. Rod's going to be there this week, and he's going to affect a lot of young hearts. I want to tell you, I have baptized people who came to me many years later in life because they learned about Jesus at church camp. And maybe they didn't respond at the time, but they learned about Jesus, and they learned about the love of God's people. My niece met her husband at church camp when she was 10 years old, is that right? Now, they didn't get married when they were 10 years old. She graduated from Freed Hardeman before they got married. But their relationship lasted for many, many years because she met this young man at church camp and was impressed by him. Our kids are going to have a great amount of influence on them and that they will give to others and influence others with during this summer of church camp. So pray for the kids at church camp each week. There's always drama. There are always difficulties. And believe it or not, it's always hot. I heard somebody say one time about global warming, said it's going to be hotter this summer than it's been all year to date, which is very true. It's always hotter in the summer. Pray for the kids. Rod helped design the cabins, and they have air conditioning in the cabins, which is something we never experienced growing up. But how great it is for all the kids that will have that opportunity, how great it is that we have Areopagus to send them to. So keep the kids in prayers, keep those that are directing the camps in prayers, and those that are doing all the various teaching and works. We need that. I think it's a great work that we're involved in. In Daniel, we're introduced to one of my favorite of all of God's people when we look at it. According to the book that bears his name, Daniel was young when he was taken into captivity. He was handsome, he was wise, he was intelligent, he had good common sense. He was among the ones that were brought to King Nebuchadnezzar, and when he was brought there to the court at the king's command, they were set apart. There's this one group of people. These are the ones that are the best looking, the smartest, the brightest. These are the ones he's going to train up to be, literally, to be leaders among his own people. And he's going to train them up to do that because they're really good. Brock Johnson wrote, "The book of Daniel is so rich with content that we could easily make a sermon series out of his life. His relationship with God, and ability to cooperate with an earthly king without compromising his standing with the heavenly king." And he's right. I've done a series on Daniel a couple of times, and boy, there's a lot in Daniel. You could do a whole series on the prophecies in Daniel. You could do a whole series on the faith of Daniel. You could do a whole series. We're not going to do a whole series on all those things. We're going to address a little bit of Daniel from Daniel chapter 1 this morning as we do that. And we're going to look at three aspects of his life. We're going to look at his faithfulness, and we're going to look at his prophecy, and we're going to look at his provision from God. And that's the three things we'll look at this morning. And in chapter 1, we're going to see him successfully overcome the first challenge. Verses 6 and 7 of chapter 1 of Daniel says, "Then Daniel said..." I got the wrong text there. I'm glad I've got it here in my Bible. He says in verse 6 and 7, "Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah, and the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego," or Abednego as we learned it growing up, or as a friend of mine says her daughter her son used to call him all the time, "To bed we go." Maybe that's a... Anyhow, these are the young men. And the young men refused to eat the morsels from the king's table. You know, when we think about Daniel that way and we think about what he ate and didn't eat, we do that. Next week we're going to meet Azariah and Hananiah and Mishael or the names that you probably know them better by as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we're going to talk about them next week a little bit. But this week we're going to talk about Daniel and his faithfulness in this food eating thing. You know, I can imagine, probably, I've tried real hard, this week I tried real hard to imagine what it would be like to never be able to eat bacon. I mean, you know, no grilled pork chops. No baked ham. And Kathy, none of that great barbecue that your husband makes. I mean, I just tried to imagine. Last night we had catfish and shrimp. Those are all forbidden foods for the Jews. Can you imagine? You've been taken from your homeland. You're a young boy. You're in the company of many other young boys, and there's a great amount of influence among peers when you do things like that. You're taken into the king's table. Now, you've lived in a city that's been under attack, that's been being besieged for years. You have probably done without many of your meals. At best, many of your meals have been just the most meager rations to get you by. If you go back and read about the siege of Jerusalem that's recorded in your text, they were eating things like pigeon dung. Some of the women were killing their own children and eating their children. That's how bad it was where you came from. And now all of a sudden, you're at the king's table. And here's a buffet laid out before you like you've never seen before. And these guys get to eat whatever they want. And Daniel and them said, nope, we're not going to do it. We're not going to eat any of it because there's unclean things on the table, so we're not going to eat any part of it. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, that is pretty amazing for a young boy to have that kind of faith when we look at that. And I'm not sure that we understand the reality of that until we look at the whole picture of where he came from. He's literally been starving, and he still turns down these choice morsels because that's not what he's supposed to eat. And so we're going to see that a little bit about him as we look at Daniel. We're going to see how God's going to use him as a prophet. He's going to prophesy to Nebuchadnezzar through dreams and interpreting dreams. He's going to prophesy the coming of Christ. God's going to reward him with provision and protection and promise because of his hope. So let's meet him a little bit. And the first thing we're going to see is that Daniel was faithful. Daniel was faithful. You know, when he's spoken of, when we mentioned Daniel's name, when I said, hey, we're going to talk about Daniel, the first thing that comes to our mind most of the time is the lion's den. That's the story of Daniel that we remember. That's the one that we know. That's the one all the little kids have seen the pictures of and colored the color sheets with and things like that, because it's a really fascinating part of the thing. But what we miss is that as great as Daniel was in the big things, Daniel was faithful in the little things. Daniel was faithful in the little bitty things. And maybe sometimes, maybe we don't understand that. The teacher asked his students one time, and he says, how many of you have ever been bitten by an elephant? And you know how many raised their hands? None. Nobody's ever been bitten by an elephant. How many of you have ever been bitten by a mosquito? You see, the little things make a difference. The little things make all the difference in the world. Maybe we ought to understand that when we do that and think about those things. Daniel's faithfulness was evident in the den of lions, but it was just as evident when he looked at all that food and he turned it down. He was faithful at dinner time. You know, he was faithful all the way from what could eat him all the way down to what he could eat. And he wouldn't eat the food, not because the food wasn't any good, but because the food itself defied God. Now, I'm not sure that everything that was put before them was not kosher, but it wasn't prepared properly. And because it wasn't edible according to God's law, and he could have easily eaten it. Who would have cared? I mean, who would have cared? If he's your kid, and he's been starving, and now he's got a chance to eat, do you care what he eats as long as he gets to eat? Well, somebody must have cared. I mean, maybe. The other boys didn't care. You know what the other boys didn't like? What the other boys didn't like is when Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego stood up and said, hey, we don't want to eat this stuff. Give us a little while and watch us eat, and we'll eat only vegetables. Let these other guys eat all this good stuff. And then when it's over with, look and see who looks better. Who's the healthiest? and judge by that. Now, if I'd have been one of them other boys, I'd have said, you shut up. I want bacon. I don't understand that. Would you turn down bacon or pork chops or barbecue? I don't know. Daniel could have said, well, you know, it's the law. I got to do what the king tells me to do, and they want me to eat this food. But instead he said, I've got to do what God wants me to do. He was faithful in little things like dinner time. He was faithful at prayer time. A veteran, a Christian veteran who went to Iraq, said the one thing that impressed him most when he was in Iraq serving over there was the way the Iraqis responded at prayer times. You know, I wonder sometimes, I know it's one of the tenets of the Islamic faith that they pray five times a day facing Mecca. I know that they set off bells and whistles and they'll chant from their towers to get each other's attention so that they know it's prayer time, and they stop doing whatever they're doing in the middle of their business day, in the middle of school, in the middle of whatever it is, and they kneel and they pray. And I know that we look at that and say, well, that's just a ritual. Oh, it was just a ritual for Daniel, because when they put the ordinance in place that he couldn't pray to God in Daniel chapter 6, it says Daniel went into his room three times a day, as was his custom, and prayed with his window open facing Jerusalem. And the words there, as was his custom. Do you have a customary time to pray? Do you have a time that prayer takes precedence over anything else? These folks do. And we wonder sometimes whether they're really faithful, but they're faithful to what they believe. That's pretty impressive when we look at it. So what happens is this ordinance is made in chapter 6. I said I wasn't going to talk about Daniel and Lion's Den. We're not, but we are. This ordinance is made in chapter 6 that anybody who prays to any man or any god other than Darius, or Darius, depending on how you want to pronounce it. I was always taught Darius, and now I know it's supposed to be Darius. But Darius the king, if anybody prays to any other god or to any other king or to any other man, that they're to be put to death, cast into a lion's den. The people that did that, the people that had him pass the law, already knew about Daniel. They already knew about Daniel. They knew this is how we're going to catch this guy. He's not doing anything wrong, but we'll catch him in his faith. And so they're going to persecute him based on his faith. In verse 10 of chapter 6, it says, when he knew the decree had been signed. So Daniel knew they were planning it. Daniel knew they were plotting it. Daniel knew that it was about to happen. He waited until it was signed. No, he didn't. It says, as was his custom. He did it the whole time. He was praying, in spite of the decree. Now, note, it doesn't say he went out on the street corner and prayed so he could be seen by everybody. It doesn't say that he stormed the citadel so that the king could see him praying. It doesn't say he took out a newspaper ad saying, watch me pray. What it says is he went to his room like he always did, and he prayed like he always did. He wasn't trying to put on a show of public disobedience or something like that, or civil disobedience like people say that ought to happen sometimes. No, he was doing what he had always done. He was praying to God in his room. I think there's a really good point there too, that he wasn't screaming from the rooftop. He was praying in his room. Didn't Jesus say when you get ready to pray, don't do it so that people can see you? Go into your private place, go into your prayer closet, go into wherever it is that you can pray and talk to God in private, and God will reward you. I think we ought to see that when we see his prayer time. He was faithful in feeding time. You know, maybe the most likely thing that we think of at feeding time is him denying the food, but what about when the lions were ready to be fed? He's supposed to be sentenced. The ones want to have him persecuted. They're going to kill him there. But Daniel's faithfulness is not the only faith that's on display there. The faithfulness of God is on display there. But no, even more than that, Darius's faith is on display here. Daniel, I hope that your God will be able to deliver you. Daniel, your God, the God, should be able to deliver you. All night long, he can't sleep. Early in the morning, early in the morning, he rushes out of bed. He rushes to the pit. He goes to the stone. He stands by the stone. He doesn't say, oh, poor Daniel. What he says is, Daniel, was your God able to protect you? I believe that your God was able to protect you. I expect to hear your voice answering me. I believe in the same God you do. The faithfulness of God was displayed in protecting Daniel. The faithfulness of Daniel was displayed in being willing to be thrown into the pit of the lions. But the faithfulness of Darius shows that Daniel had had a huge influence on him in his life. He expected Daniel to still be alive. I have a question. How many of us would have expected Daniel to still be alive the next day? Is our faith as great as the faith of this, I guess, pagan king? But his faith was pretty great. His faith was pretty wonderful. Have you ever stopped and thought about that? Daniel's faithfulness affected those people around him. The next thing we see about Daniel is Daniel is a prophet. You know, if you're one of God's people that you read about in the Old Testament, probably you were a prophet, because we read about a lot of prophets in the Old Testament. As we've met God's people, it seems like almost all of them prophesied in some way or another at one time or another. And so we've seen a lot of prophets as we've done this. And it's true of Daniel. God gave him the power of prophecy through interpreting dreams and interpreting visions. And he prophesied from the thrones of kings all the way up to the throne of Christ. You know, he was a king's prophet. Nebuchadnezzar was one of the kings, and he interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. You remember the dream where Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, and Daniel says, oh, and it was a tree trunk, and it was bound by iron, and he says, you're going to be crazy. You're going to go crazy. You're going to go around. You're going to be out in the water, the dew, and the rain, and it happened just like Daniel said. The prophecies came true. Can you imagine the prophecies that Daniel had? The writing on the wall for King Belshazzar. Can you imagine that? All of a sudden, they're having a big banquet, and a hand starts writing on the wall. And everybody sees it. And nobody knows what it means. And Daniel says, here's what it means. It means you're falling short. Means you're going to have some problems. Means there's going to be some difficulties in your life. Means it's fixing to get really bad for you. That's what it means. You know, but along the way, he sees these big, terrible things, terrible creatures. Along the way, the king comes to him and says, hey, let me tell you about this statue I saw. By the way, if you ever want to know how big the statue was that Nebuchadnezzar had raised, the one that they had raised that Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego wouldn't bow down to, I don't want to give away next week, but if you're standing right here where I'm at, that's the top of the head, and if you look at the front doors back there, that's where the feet would have been. 94 feet tall. 94 feet tall. And Daniel says, oh, hey, wait, there's more to it than just a statue. It's about you being great, king. It's about another king being even stronger, but not as great. It's about another king being even more difficult, but not being as great. And it's about another king that's kind of spreads out his power all around. And in the days of those kings, Daniel 2:44, he says, in the very days of the Roman Empire, that Christ would set up a kingdom that would last forever. Daniel prophesying many, many years before Christ, more than 600 years before Christ, saying this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen in the days of those kings. He's very clear about that, prophesying about the church and the prophecies that were going to happen. As he prayed and prophesied, we see Daniel. The next thing we see about Daniel is that Daniel was God's person. He was willing to do whatever it was God wanted him to do, and he was willing to take advantage of whatever it was God wanted him to do, and God blessed him in so many ways. But Daniel, in so many ways, showed that he was worthy of the blessings that God gave him. God blessed him with provision. He provided him with everything he would need, and he took care of that. It didn't matter that Daniel didn't eat the king's food. God took care of him eating the other food. And he was healthier than the other kids were. And they were the strongest and healthiest of all the youth. That's found in verse 15 of chapter 1. In fact, Nebuchadnezzar looks at him and says, they're 10 times healthier than the other kids. I don't know how you figure that out. I don't know exactly how you know somebody's 10 times healthier than somebody else. But they were healthy. They were healthy enough that it was noticeable. That's the thing. They were healthy enough, more healthy enough, that it was noticeable. But not only did God give him provision, God raised him to a position of power. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were raised to be satraps over provinces of Babylon. The three of them were leaders, and above them was Belteshazzar, was Daniel. Above them was Daniel. Daniel's a leader among these foreign people. They've raised him up into a position of great power. You know, his ability to interpret dreams and visions, three different pagan kings looked to Daniel for guidance and wisdom, and ultimately looked to his God for guidance and wisdom. That's the influence he had. That's the influence he showed. Again, Darius' faithful sayings, his faith in God delivering Daniel, is just amazing when you read that story. And he professed his own faith in God's influence there in Daniel chapter 6. But God didn't just provide him with provision and power. God also watched over him. He protected him. He protected him. You know, he shut the mouths of the lions. That's true. But you know when he really provided protection? When the writing was on the wall. And the king says, what does it mean? And nobody knew. Nobody had a clue. So the king said, if you haven't read that part lately, go back and read the book of Daniel and read that part. The king says, we're going to kill every wise man in the country unless somebody tells me. And they said, nobody can tell you, only God can tell you. Daniel says, I'll tell you, because God revealed that to Daniel. God protected Daniel at a time when he was going to be put to death there as well. I don't know if we think about that. If you don't eat the food, you're going to be put to death. God protected Daniel when he didn't eat the food. If you don't bow down, you're going to be put to death. Well, we're going to read next week about the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I bet Daniel didn't bow down either. You're going to be put to death if you can't interpret this writing. Daniel interpreted the writing. You're going to be put to death if you pray to God. Daniel prayed to God. Over and over and over, God protected him because he was doing what God wanted him to do. You know, God gives us provision and power and protection, but he also has promises for us. Oh, they're so great. In one of the most beautiful endings of any book in the Bible, we read about God's promise to prosper Daniel in the end days. How great that is. His faithfulness has been rewarded. He's got a promise for his people to be delivered, and Daniel's going to receive a greater reward than even God has already provided. That's the promise of Daniel. That's the hope of Daniel. You know, the question that I have for us, how faithful are you in the little things? Oh, I want to do great things for the kingdom of God. I want to do the great things. We all do, don't we? Wouldn't you like to be the one who could establish a school for preachers, or who could establish a hospital that would cure cancer and do it in the name of God so that everybody would worship God and everybody would be influenced by? Wouldn't you like to be able to put a television program together that everybody in the world could see God and see his faith? Wouldn't you like to be the one that could interview Jesus on national TV or something like that? But do we do the little things? See, Jesus says, he that's faithful in the little things, he's the one that's able to do the big things. And I think sometimes we forget about the little things because we want to do the big things. We look at the big picture and we want to be the big picture guy, and we don't realize that the little picture guy is the one that ends up being the big picture guy. We've got a couple of coaches in the room. I guarantee you, if you ask them, they'll tell you, doing the little things day by day are what makes the big things happen in the game. If you don't do the little things, you're not going to do the big things. You're not ever going to get to them. Judd will tell you real quick, if you don't do the little things about taking care of your eyes, the big things are going to be a big problem later on. And you're not ever going to get to the big things. Would you have the faith to pray if you knew it was illegal? Would you have the faith to eat food that wasn't the food you wanted because your God had told you otherwise? And you say, oh, yeah, George, no problem there. No problem. Imagine for just a minute, it's 1936 or so. You're a Jewish lady living in Germany. You see signs starting to pop up all around you. Juden verboten. Jews forbidden. You can't go into many restaurants. You can't go into many places of business. They won't even wait on you there. They won't allow you there. You've heard of work camps and internment camps. You haven't yet heard of death camps, although they already exist. You just haven't heard of them yet because they're keeping it pretty quiet. You know that persecution's getting harder and harder and more difficult, and that more and more Jews are being carried away to the work camps. And you have a son. And so you take your baby boy into the middle of this world, into the middle of all this turmoil, knowing what's going on, maybe even with a little inkling of what might happen in the next 10 years to your son. Do you have him circumcised? Because in 10 years, that circumcision is going to be a mark of death for him. So you do that? Do you have that much faith? You see, the little things add up. An hour is not very much. Even a day is not very much. A week, I mean, hey, we take a week's vacation. We don't think anything about that. A month, hey, that's a pretty good amount of time. If you missed a month at work, people might not like that very much. But what about a year? Years add up. You know, I'm old enough to get senior discount everywhere I go, and I only got 64 and a half years. I mean, in all the time I've been alive. Now I got a lot of days and a lot of weeks and a lot of months, but not that many years. See, it adds up pretty quick. We've got some here that are approaching a century. Wow. It adds up in a hurry. The little things add up. There's a song, "Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There's no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever will be. Summer and winter and springtime and harvest, sun, moon, and stars and their courses above, join with all nature in manifold witness to thy great faithfulness, mercy, and love, pardon for sin and a peace that endureth, thine own dear presence to cheer and to guide, strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow, blessings all mine with 10,000 beside." The chorus goes, "Great is thy faithfulness. Great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, your love has provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me." Well, I love the song. I love the hymn. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and I'll close with this, says, "Who can really be faithful in great things if he's not learned to be faithful in the daily things of life?" Daniel learned faithfulness at the dinner table as a young boy, so that when he's an old man facing the greatest challenge of his life, the lion's den, even the king has the faithfulness of a Daniel because of his faithfulness all along the way. How great is your faithfulness? Have you been faithful in obedience to God? Jesus said, he who believes and is baptized will be saved.